We have two readings this morning. The first is coming from the Old Testament, Samuel chapter 18, verse 4 through 33. The king said to them, "Whatever seems best to you, I will do." So the king stood at the side of the gate while the army marched out by hundreds and by thousands. And the king ordered Joab and Abishai and Ittai, "Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom." And all the people heard when the king gave orders to all the commanders about Absalom. So the army went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was fought in the forest of Ephraim. And the men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David, and the slaughter there was great on that day, 20,000 men. The battle spread over the face of all the country, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword. And Absalom chanced to meet the servants of David. Absalom was riding upon his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great oak, and his head caught fast in the oak as he was left hanging between heaven and earth. While the mule was under him, went on. And a certain man saw it and told Joab, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak." Joab said to the man who told him, "What? You saw him? Why then did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have been glad to give you 10 pieces of silver and a girdle." But the man said to Joab, "Even if I felt in my hand the weight of 1,000 pieces of silver, I would not put forth my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, 'For my sake protect the young man Absalom.' On the other hand, if I had dealt treacherously against his life, and there is nothing hidden from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof." Joab said, "I will not waste time like this with you." And he took 3 darts in his hand and thrust them into the heart of Absalom. While he was still alive in the oak, and 10 young men, Joab's armor bearer, surrounded Absalom and struck him and killed him. Then Joab blew the trumpet, and the troops came back from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained them. And they took Absalom and threw him into a great pit in the forest and raised over him a great heap of stones. And all Israel fled, every one to his own home. Now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and set up for himself the pillar which is in the king's valley. For he said, "I have no son to keep my name in remembrance." He called the pillar after his own name, and it is called Absalom's monument to this day. Then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, "Let me run and carry tidings to the king that the Lord has delivered him from the power of his enemies." And Joab said to him, "You are not to carry tidings today. You may carry tidings another day, but today you shall carry no tidings, because the king's son is dead." Then Joab said to the Cushite, "Go tell the king what you have seen." The Cushite bowed before Joab and ran. Then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said to Joab, "Come what may, let me also run after the Cushite." And Joab said, "Why will you run, my son, seeing that you will have no reward for the tidings?" "Come what may," he said, "I will run." So he said to him, "Run." Then Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain and outran the Cushite. Now David was sitting between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof of the gate by the wall. And when he lifted up his eyes and looked, he saw a man running alone. And the watchman called out and told the king. And the king said, "If he is alone, there are tidings in his mouth." And he came apace and drew near. And the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called to the gate and said, "See, another man running alone." The king said, "He also brings tidings." And the watchman said, "I think the running of the foremost is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok." And the king said, "He is a good man and comes with good tidings." Then Ahimaaz cried out to the king, "All is well." And he bowed before the king with his face to the earth and said, "Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. And the king said, is it well with the young man Absalom? Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I do not know what it was. And the king said, turn aside and stand here. So he turned aside and stood still. And behold, the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, good tidings for my lord the king. For the Lord has delivered you this day from your power of all who rose up against you. The king said to the Cushite, is it well with the young man Absalom? And the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be like that young man. And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he wept, he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son, my son. The second reading comes from Theologians, chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. We give thanks to God always for you all, constantly mentoring you in our prayers, remembering before our God and Father your work of faith and labor of love and steadfastness of hope in our Lord Jesus Christ. This is the word of the Lord.
What should we call him? Judah? Zebulun? What should we call this little boy? Absalom? Where'd you come up with that name? Absalom. Huh. Do you really think that about me? Absalom, you know, means my father is peace. Av. It's the same word Jesus uses in the Garden of Gethsemane. Abba. Father. It's Aramaic word for daddy. Ab. Shalom. We all know this word, right? Shalom. It means peace. Av shalom. My father is peace. I hope I can live up to that. And so all the long years of David's kingship is punctuated by the birth of his children, like it is for any parent. Absalom betrays his father, rapes his sister, organizes an army against his father, the king, which is high treason. But in the final analysis, all David can think about is the little boy that he held in his arms. And he says to his generals, deal gently with the young man Absalom for my sake. And when the Cushite brings the news, may the enemies of my lord the king be as that young man. David doesn't remember the rapist. David doesn't remember the betrayal. David doesn't remember the high treason. The only thing David can remember is the little boy that he held in his arms with great joy, whom he named, my father is peace. Av shalom. And he is inconsolable at the death of his boy. And he goes into his chamber, he tears his clothes, and says, ah, my son, Absalom, Absalom, would God, I had died for thee. so it is with all of our lives. Life in this world is punctuated by joy and tragedy. But finally, we must say goodbye to the ones that we love. There's a particularly moving story. It's a great Scottish trilogy. And the first book is called Sunset Song. It's about a young woman who survives the tragedy of domestic violence. She inherits her father's farm. She gets married to a wonderful young man, and World War I arrives. And he is conscripted, and he comes back from the war, and he is not himself. He is violent and disturbed. And so their home is broken. And he is called up again, and he goes to war. And somewhere in the middle of his madness, in the trenches of Belgium and France, this young man remembers his wife and remembers his son and deserts, takes off running, except that he's caught. And the young man is brought before the tribunal and court-martialed with desertion and shot by his own comrades. But one of them goes back to his hometown in Scotland and tells his wife, he was killed for you. He deserted in an attempt to come home. For after all his madness and all the demons of war had settled in his brain, there was still somehow the clarity of his love for his wife and his child. And he said, no more. I cannot be away from them anymore. And he lost his life seeking and yearning for the ones he loved. The title of the book is Sunset Song, and the very last scene in the book is the highlands of Scotland. And there are a few townsfolk gathered just as the light dips below some ominous clouds. And there's this last ray of sun as the day fades, and a piper stands silhouetted on the hill. And all you see is his silhouette with the pipes coming up this way. And he plays this lament that echoes through the valley. And it's a lament for all those who did not come home. What does it mean to say goodbye to the ones we love? It means everything. Means everything. And we are lost often in this grief. The difference is this, my friends. Whereas David could not give his life for his son, God can. God looks at all of our grief, all of our raping and pillaging of each other, of this planet. God looks at the destruction, the self-inflicted destruction of the human family, and he feels exactly the same thing for us that David feels for that young man whose name is Peace. God says about us, would that I had died for thee. And the difference is God has the power to accomplish this. And so God becomes one of us to take our suffering into himself, to bear the consequence of our sin. But God, as Jesus says, has the power to lay his life down, and God has the power to take it up again. And so we ask the question, what is this love that makes the church in Thessalonica famous across the Middle Eastern world? What is this love of the church that becomes the story told by everyone. It can only be one thing. It can only be the love of a group of people who have understood God's love for us. That's the only thing it could be. We see in the cross and resurrection of Jesus something that no one of us can do, which is the recovery of life in the midst of death. Jesus is crucified, it says in our creed, died and was buried. Died and was buried. Do you know this old expression, dead as a doornail? You know this expression? This was a phrase coined by the early church father Irenaeus to describe Christ in the grave. There was a heresy in the church that Christ hadn't really died. That just before his death, the divinity of Christ had been separated from the humanity of Christ, and the divine Christ, Christ says, I give up the ghost. I give up my spirit. Into your hands I commend my spirit. So then the divine part of Christ ascends, the human part dies, but there's this separation, this duality, this dualism. The church came to say, no, this is incorrect. And what we have on the cross is mysteriously and inexplicably the death of God. And the miracle is this that is revealed in Jesus. God is not a singularity, but a tri-unity. And when the Son, the begotten one, is dead as a doornail, God, who is the parent, and God, who is the Spirit, refuse to be without him. And so the Father sends the Spirit into the grave and raises the Son to new life. Because the Father looks at the cross and says about his Son, Yeshua, Yeshua, my Son. Would God I had died for thee. And God, as we see in the scriptures, always swears by himself. And he says always to Israel, I will save you for the sake of my name. And so, because of Jesus' faith, he is raised from the dead by the ones who love him, by the ones who refuse to see him go. The Father and the Spirit refuse to say goodbye to the Son. So what is the love of God? The love of God is simply this, dear friends. In the beginning, when God began to create the heavens and the earth, God decided that he would create us so that we could be together with God and each other. And when our love failed, God decides again not to be without us. God looks at every one of us and refuses to say goodbye. Now, what is this labor of love in which the church is employed? It is to look at all the suffering of this town, the suffering of the person who lives next door to you, the suffering of those who are incarcerated down the street on 21, the suffering of those who guard them, the suffering of those who are addicted to meth and pornography, the suffering of those who are trapped in domestic violence, the suffering of those who have no home, no food, no clothes. It is to look at those who are dying for all of our poverties are killing us. But the labor of love, which is the great calling of the church, is to look at those who are dying and go to them and say, we refuse to be without you. And there has come a God into our midst who calls the things that do not exist into existence. There is a God who has come among us who gives life to the dead. And therein lies our hope. And at the parting, which we will all inevitably experience, Jesus says this to us. Until next time, there is no goodbye. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not be afraid. I'm going away to prepare a place for you. And I will come again, that where I am, you may be also. Who else is doing this kind of work? Is the Lions Club doing this kind of work? Is the Lions Club preaching this message of hope? What about the Rotary Club? They do great stuff, don't they? What about the school programs? I am giving food to the hungry students. That seems like a Christian ministry. Except they never take the final step of saying, death is overcome. And that's why we're here. That's why we're doing what we're doing. Because of who God is for us in Jesus. Nobody else is doing this. Nobody else is proclaiming this. Just the church. And this is why we give. Isn't this an odd stewardship campaign? This is why we give, though. It's an act of love. It's an act of courage. It risks everything. Because the church is the place where we gather to be spiritually formed to go out in the world and face the calamity of our time with the good news of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who was dead as a doornail, and is alive. To say to all those who are losing their lives and have lost the ones they love, it is not goodbye. It is until next time. No one else is doing this work. No one else has this message. No one else cares this way about people. This is what we need to learn while we're here. This is why we give. Amen.